Hello and salam alaikum. I'm Shalina Jan Mohammed and this is Muslim Women Talk Ramadan. Each week we have been bringing you your Ramadan pep talk, a weekly hug and a BFF to help us get through Ramadan successfully and perhaps even our best Ramadan yet. I actually can't believe that we have got to almost the final stages of Ramadan. We have the nights of Laylatul Qadr coming up and then we have Eid beyond that. And all of that fatigue and all of that apprehension and that anxiety definitely has totally melted away. But those last 10 nights, that's all about the focus. And then thinking about the joy of Eid beyond that.
I always go for an Eid breakfast and then my day just opens up and I end up having a fabulous time.
And just having this open dialogue of solidarity and love and affection towards each other.
And a sense of belonging and connection.
I have found it really helpful to think about compassion and self-respect. And this week, with our Ramadan BFF, we are going to be talking about kindness, which I think is the absolute and ultimate gift that we can give ourselves and the people around us. So you probably don't need to hear me talking any longer. We want to get on with those conversations because this, after all, is in the name of the podcast. It's about talking and Muslim women and Ramadan. So first up, we are going to do our final check-in with our dearest little girls, Hannah and Iman. I feel like they are all your daughters now as well, and you can share them too. Then we're going to talk to Henrietta about kindness and how we apply that to our lives. And then we thought the perfect interview to finish this amazing series, and your feedback has been so incredible all the way through. We couldn't think of anyone better than Farzana Rahman, the founder of the Desi Doll Company. First up, here are Hannah and Iman.
Assalamu alaikum, my lovelinesses.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Can you believe that we are entering the last 10 days of Ramadan?
We are?
Yep. All this time, you've been at school in Ramadan, but for the rest of the month of fasting, you're going to be on holiday at home. What do you think is going to change?
I think it might be a bit harder because school is like normally more of a distraction from fasting. So it's easier, like, and we get less hungry, but it can also be good because we can spend the time, instead of worrying about work and things, just relaxing and resting.
Lions and more lions.
Okay, well, that lions and more lions is pretty clear. Now, we've also got the nights of Laylatul Qadr coming up. What are your plans for that?
To do lots of du'as and make a list of things that I want to do.
To be able to figure out what I want for the next coming up year and to make du'as for everybody around the world.
Eid is coming and then a fresh beginning. What do you think you're going to take forward from Ramadan into the coming year?
I'm going to try and take forward the mindset of Ramadan into Eid. And I know it won't be exactly the same because we won't be fasting and everything, but hopefully I'll be able to take what I've learned into account.
And Iman, what about you?
I'm going to try and be like I'm fasting during not Ramadan.
Do you two know that you have attracted a bit of a fan club during this series? And I have been told that you have stolen the show. Are you going to have your own podcast and completely surpass your mum?
Yes. Jinx, padlock, 1, 2, 3.
Well, I cannot wait to see how things are going to go for the last 10 days. So I guess it's prayers for Laylatul Qadr and an Eid Mubarak from you two.
Eid Mubarak!
And now, to help us carry on that journey of Ramadan, but also to go beyond that, we are welcoming Henrietta Savati for our final stage in this Ramadan journey to talk to us about kindness. I can't believe we are at the last episode of our conversation with our Ramadan BFF, Henrietta Savati. Salaam alaikum, Henrietta.
Wa alaikum salaam.
How have you been finding this journey with us?
As every year, something new comes up and something is familiar. So I think it's the roller coaster that I go over every single year.
It's a good description of the feelings of Ramadan. Now, for anyone who wants to go back and listen to the previous episodes, we discussed how to map the Ramadan journey and in particular how to go from doing Ramadan to being and how to deploy and develop compassion and self-respect in the journey. We're now, Henrietta, into the final nights of Laylatul Qadr, the nights of power, and we are also going to be prepping for Eid. So what is the final treasure that we're taking forward with you?
I think it has to be kindness, because a kindness is the practice of everything we have spoken about. You know, there's no point of talking about compassion if we can't do it with kindness to ourselves. There's no point of talking about self-respect if we are not kind. So kindness really wraps up, it's almost like a little Eid gift, is it wraps up what we have learned and how do we do it in the kindest possible way towards ourselves.
I love that we're going to give ourselves kindness for an Eid present.
Why not?
Not the toys that my kids are hoping for, but kindness, that's beautiful. But we are trained to be kind to others, and Ramadan definitely helps us to bring that out in ourselves. We're giving charity, we're thinking about those who have less than us. So isn't it counterintuitive in Ramadan to be thinking about being kind to ourselves?
Well, I wonder whether we can be kind to others if we are not kind to ourselves. That's really the question I always ask myself, because if I'm kind to others, but I always say this, I don't trust people who are kind to others, but they are not kind to themselves. And I explain a little bit about this. I think kindness is a behavior that is easy to pick up, easy to pretend, easy to play with, and it comes from different sources. We can be kind because we want something from somebody. There's an ulterior motive. We can act as a kind person. But if you are acting kindly towards others, but you can't be kind to yourself, the gap is going to show up. And then there is a discrepancy. There is a lack of integrity. There is a lack of authenticity there. And I always question when I see people doing that, why are you kind to me when you're not kind to yourself?
One of the things that I am terrified about myself is, for example, I read obituaries of other people or I read bios and they are these amazing people out in the world. And then later you hear about how they were very different in their own homes and in their own families. And one of my great terrors for myself is that the things that I am in public, would the people who know me in private be able to say the same thing? Because in my mind, who you are in private is what you really are, is who you really are. And if those people don't get the sunshine of your gifts and your talents, then are you really that person? I really live in quite a lot of terror of that. But you're taking it one step, which is not just the people you live immediately with, it's yourself as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's one of those things that public figures would identify with, is that we have a public persona and we have a private persona. And I think kindness is the tool that is going to help you to live with integrity. Because if you can be the same person at home, who you are with other people, then you live in integrity. And kindness is a way to go through it. And I remember when I got married, my husband said to me something very interesting. I said, what are you looking for? And he said, I'm not looking for anything in particular. I just want a woman who is kind. Oh. And, you know, at that time, I didn't think much about it. But now I do, because I think to be kind is a really hard thing to do. Actually, it's not easy when you are stressed, when you are tired, when you are hungry, when you are hangry. It's not easy to be kind. And I think it's that part of the personality that if we can tame, that element of remaining and to be able to be kind to ourselves, then that kindness is going to emanate everywhere else in the house.
One of the things that we've been trying to work on over the episodes of this podcast series is to identify the behaviours that are the manifestation of some of those inner pieces of work we need to do. So how can we identify? What does it look like when you're not being kind to yourself?
You're very critical of what you do. You have a very strong critical voice about however you speak, however you show up. You are self-degrading. You are constantly double-guessing yourself. You lose your confidence. You start people-pleasing because you can be kind to others, but you are not kind to yourself. You are almost, I'm very careful with using the word, but you are abusing your body in a way that is not helpful. You are not eating the right food, you are not drinking enough. And I know it's Ramadan, but I'm talking in general sense of you're not kind to your soul by listening to what your body needs. And I think it's about how we do our iftars, you know, how many invitations we can possibly fulfill, how many events do we go to. These are all small acts of kindness towards ourselves.
So I'm starting to paint a picture in my mind about how when we're not nourishing ourselves with kindness, that can lead to fatigue, physical fatigue, but also spiritual fatigue.
Emotional fatigue. Yes, absolutely. It's you know, kindness is a very interesting emotion and state of being, because when you are kind, it actually nurtures your psyche. It nurtures your soul. It doesn't take much to be kind. It's again, it's one of those little tweaks. And out of the big topics that we have talked about, kindness is actually the humblest, because it's so tiny, it's so sweet, it takes so little to be kind to ourselves. But if you miss it minute after minute, you realize that you are fatigued at the end of the day. So it's tiny acts of kindness.
I think sometimes we think that other people deserve us to be kind, but we don't deserve ourselves to be kind. So if we're not kind, or if we are kind to ourselves, how does that impact other people?
So look at it this way. Every person has an energetic signature, I believe. And I think you know this probably more than anyone else. You walk into a room, you feel people's energy. You feel something good or you feel something negative. So you read people for energy. There is a fundamental difference between someone coming into a room with kindness. It's a different, you know, you have a different feel, a different sensation in the room, or someone who is closed, someone who is not particularly in touch with themselves. And that's what the children and the animals and every human being feels. There are people who you naturally navigate towards. You feel like you want to be with them. And there are people just, okay, I can deal with this. But kindness is one of those things that if we don't pay attention, we don't give out that energy of invitation. We are not open. We are not standing there with open arms. We are closed off and we are not letting people come close to us.
It's true. When you hang out with those people, you just feel relaxed and you can be your complete self. And what a joy to think that each of us could be that person.
Absolutely.
Give us those practical hacks. That's what we're here for. Mm. Now that we've understood why being kind to ourselves as well as others is important, how do we practice kindness to ourselves?
So I think for this one, I'm going to give this tip that I have been practicing and I have always, always promoted this. After every prayer, we need to sit down and do 2 or 3 minutes of reflection and think about, what did I do between my last prayer and this prayer where I have fallen off of who I want to be? And after each prayer, you actually, this is amazing about our tradition, is that we don't pray once or twice a day. We pray 5 times. So we've got 5 opportunities to reset our energy, our kindness, our own dignity, our own sense of self, self-respect and compassion. So after each prayer, just stay on the prayer mat and ask yourself this question. What did I do from my last prayer until this prayer that I didn't like? What do I need to rectify? And how can I go through the time between now and my next prayer so I can shift my energy and I can be kinder to myself or more compassionate or whatever you are looking for?
Henrietta, we've been on quite a journey over
indeed.
The 4 episodes of Ramadan. We started by mapping the way and you have taken us on a journey. We've gone on that journey together of compassion, self-respect and kindness. But we have the Laylatul Qadr and we have Eid. And then after that, we're going to be on our own for a while. Give us some food for thought to think about how we carry on that journey, because Eid is not the end. It should be the beginning.
Yes, indeed. So I think after having spoken about so many interesting things, you know, with the idea of compassion, self-respect and kindness, how do we hold conflicting emotions is one of the things that I want to invite all of us to do. So we might feel that I haven't done the perfect Ramadan, or I have fallen off, or I have failed, or I didn't do the best I could, all of that. And I think it's very natural to feel that way. We also had this feeling of I have achieved amazing things. And I want us to start thinking about it's not either or, it's both. We can feel conflicting emotions. We can feel the good and the bad at the same time. We don't have to choose, because when you choose the bad, you go down the route of self-flagellation. When you choose the good only, you are not actually taking any learning forward. So I think we are a middle nation. We are a nation of balance. We need to understand, how do we hold conflicting emotions? And when I'm going outside of Ramadan, until the next Ramadan, what is the job? What job do I have to do? What do I need to fix? First of all, what did I learn? What have I learned in this month? And what is going to be serving me to go forward? And as a result of that, what am I growing into? And is it in alignment with my values? And is it going to be the person I want to be before next Ramadan?
And finally, what's your hope for what happens for you after Ramadan?
Oh, my hope is always that Allah gives me another year to fast, together with the feeling of dread that I have sometimes before Ramadan and the difficulty. And I am one of those people who really struggles with the fast. But my hope is always that I come out of this month with at least one thing that I have changed about myself.
Well, thank you so much for going on this incredible journey with us through Ramadan. This has certainly been a new map with a new hope to go from doing to being. And we are so thankful that you have been our best friend forever in Ramadan. Thank you, Henrietta.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
By the way, will you be my best friend forever?
Yes.
I feel quite emotional finishing that conversation with Henrietta. It's so good to have a BFF who can hold your hand and support you and that is relatable. I feel also a little bit sad that this is our final conversation coming up on Muslim Women Talk Ramadan. It's been quite the roller coaster ride. But before we come to a close, I could not be more excited that we have Farzana Rahman, the founder of the Desi Doll Company, to join us and talk to us not just about her Ramadan, but also her Eid. Farzana set out on a mission to create educational tools that would expose her children to the beauty of their Islamic faith, and she has been busy balancing her role as a mum and an entrepreneur. And the result is that you can buy her dolls and her toys all around the world, including in supermarkets near you and big shops like Selfridges. Welcome and salamu alaikum, Farzana.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Now, we're going to start with a quick fire quiz to find out a bit more about your Ramadan. Are you ready?
I'll try, yes.
Quick fire quiz!
Right, what's your favourite Ramadan food?
Oh, I love a good daybara.
Getting hungry. It's nice yoghurt with
it's very
lentil.
Cooling as well, yes.
I'm coming round to your house, Farzana. What do you prefer, iftar or suhoor?
Iftar.
Who is cooking the iftar at your house?
Me.
That sounds like a very tired...
No, it's always me. And to be honest, iftar for us is just like a regular meal any other day, so...
with the daybara.
With the daybara at the start, yeah.
What's the hardest thing about Ramadan?
I think just juggling it all, isn't it? And like you said, trying to get enough sleep during the month and making sure you're achieving everything you want to be achieving and you come out the other end without any regrets. So, just trying to rise to that challenge.
And what's your favourite Ramadan activity?
It's got to be praying in Jamaat with my family, which is, a rare occasion. But because it's Ramadan, we get to pray together at Fajr time and at Maghrib time. So it's wonderful. Otherwise, we're all in doing our own thing. They wake up for Fajr at their own time and they, pray in their rooms. But Ramadan is just one of those times when we all come together, we eat suhoor together, we pray Fajr together. And after we break our fast, we pray Maghrib together. So it's beautiful.
It does sound the Ramadan dream.
Yeah.
And are you buying presents in Ramadan or are you selling them?
Both. I've just finished doing my Ramadan gifting. So I bought everyone a beautiful Ramadan Kareem table piece for family and friends. And I've given out dates to everybody from the Date Project. They do these beautiful dates for Palestine. So I've done all my Ramadan gifting. And when it comes to Eid, I have to admit, I don't do too much gifting. I just think that we're kind of beyond that now. You know, I'm just more about giving to charity now, and just giving a little bit of money to the kids, but not so much because my kids are grown up now.
Now, Ramadan is the busiest time of year for a Muslim toy company. What does a day look like for you in Ramadan?
It's pretty busy. It starts early and it finishes late. We usually, like I said, have suhoor together, pray Fajr together. And then I do like to stay awake until sunrise, because it's something I do struggle to do most times of the year. But when it comes to Ramadan, I do try and stay awake and, you know, get that barakah of the early hours, and then crack on with the day, which is getting out lots of orders, lots of emails coming through, and finding a little bit of time to cook. And I read Quran every day, so I have a 1 hour slot. This year it's going to be between 5 and 6 every day, and that's a fixed time because I join Rabata, which is an organization in the USA. And every Ramadan, they recite Quran all together with the most beautiful female reciters from around the world. And it's the best thing. I started doing about 4 years ago, and it means that I actually recite the whole Quran every Ramadan, which is such a beautiful experience and something very beautiful to do.
I'm also imagining you at your home. You gave up your corporate job 15 years ago, and you're working at home. And that can be quite intense. I know when I work from home and the kids are around, it can be quite difficult to concentrate. Like sometimes I joke with my kids, I can't get from the beginning of a sentence to the end of a sentence when I'm doing that. But you're building a business, you're an entrepreneur, you've been doing that for like 15 years before working from home was even a thing. And then in Ramadan, it becomes even more intense. I mean, are there strategies you use? Are there structures you use to try and just not lose your mind when that's happening?
It is distracting, because I have been working literally from my dining table for the last 15 years. But good news, my husband has built me an office in the garden, so a bit more privacy coming. Probably more for his benefit than mine, because I do tend to sprawl, and my dining table is just full of toys, as you can imagine. And every time we have guests over, literally I have to remove as though I don't exist, remove everything away. But yeah, it is a bit of a, it is quite difficult when you're working from home. I mean, you know, of course, when the kids are at school, it's a nice quiet space. But as soon as they're home, you know, I'm still working. So it's trying to like, you know, they kind of got used to me working from home. And they know that, you know, when they come home, it's a quick salam. How are you? And OK, we've had a quick catch up. And now let me focus, you know.
How has your relationship changed with your children over that period? Because they were quite young when you started your business. You know, they've grown up now. Have you changed to them, and have they changed to you?
They have. I think, you know, in the younger years, you know, it was fun. It was fun for them. Obviously, they're surrounded by toys and they're enjoying it. Some of them have even been voiceovers for my toys. So it's been a fun journey for them. But then they got to that kind of complacent stage where they're like, oh, really? You know, another toy. But now I think as they've grown, they're teenagers now. And I think they're really quite proud of me as, you know, as their mom. And they've seen me start this business from scratch. And they've seen how much it's grown and what we've achieved over the years. And because they're helping me more at events, they see the hard work that I've put in, and they see the feedback from the customers directly. And I think they have that, you know, they're very, very proud now.
I imagine sometimes things go wrong. What do you do when that happens?
Things do go wrong, and you know, you just have to trust in Allah's plan. Honestly, I really don't like to sweat the small stuff, as they say. I'm always just, you know, always looking at the bright side. Things could always be worse, you know. We see what's happening in the world today. So, you know, anything that happens, like, okay, that's happened, you know, let's try and fix the situation and let's move on. You know, there's just no point dwelling on it at all.
What was the worst mistake that you ever learned from?
Oh, God, there's so many. There's so many mistakes that we make.
I just want
the
really bad stuff.
Oh, goodness me. Well, you know, I've recorded toys in languages thinking that they were going to be a real hit, and they were a complete flop. There was just no demand for it in those languages because people prefer to toys that speak English and not their native tongue. So it's like, okay. So, you know, having to rework a whole load of toys, a very costly exercise, changing languages.
And what about when it goes right? How do you celebrate?
Oh, gosh. You know what? that's something that I really don't do enough of, celebrating. I just move on all the time. And I wish I did take time out to just give myself a little pat on the back and go, you know what? Wow, look what you've done, look what you've achieved.
I noticed that the bio for your brand was first, Dessie Doll Company, and that came before your personal bio. And then even in your personal bio, it didn't begin in the traditional format of, you know, Farzana Rahman is. There was some text and then it kind of just wove your name quietly in. And so I rewrote it because I wanted to introduce you. And we're so lucky that you came on to talk to us. But I was wondering, is there a little bit of you that's maybe hiding behind your brand?
Most probably, you know, I'm a bit of a shy person, you could say, a little bit of an introvert. I don't like talking about myself or my products even, you know, and it's taken me a long time to even take my business seriously over the years because I haven't come from a design background, manufacturing background. You know, I left investment banking and creating toys was just something that I was dabbling in and wasn't really expecting to make a career or a living out of it. So it took me a long time to take myself seriously as a toy designer, as a businesswoman, as a manufacturer, as a distributor. So I wear a lot of hats and, sometimes I am hiding behind them.
Well, hopefully we're going to hear much more of you going into the future because you have built something quite extraordinary, something that's affecting so many generations of children. How do you feel when you walk into a shop and you see your products there?
A lot of pride, to be honest. A lot of pride is definitely there. And you know, I don't say that easily because, you know, I would generally think, oh, yeah, you know, OK, just another person who's got toys on the shelf, you know, that's it. But really, I think when I stop and I think about it and I contemplate, I'm thinking, wow, this is actually pretty huge. You know, getting our toys, Islamic faith toys, into a mainstream store like Selfridges is pretty big. And it's big for me as a brand. It's big for our community because, you know, kids can go into iconic stores like Selfridges, a mainstream store, and see toys that are representing them on the toy shelves, that are representing their faith, that they can relate to. And I think in this day and age, you know, it's really going to boost their confidence as little Muslims and, you know, boost their identity as little Muslims, which I think is just so important. And, you know, that gives me a lot of pride that kids can go in there and see toys that they can relate to.
Now, we've invited you on. Can you share any secrets about what you're going to do next?
You know what? This year has been really, really busy for me. The last 12 months has been a bit of a funny year, but I was very fortunate to have been awarded an Inclusive Innovation Award, which is a grant. And it basically allowed me to create two innovative products that I've been working on for the last 12 months. And they're coming to an end at the end of this month. So I will have to reveal all then. But they're two very, very exciting projects that, you know, I mean, who would have thought that I'd get funding to create two educational resources for little Muslims to learn from, and I just think it's amazing.
Well, we absolutely cannot wait to hear what is going to happen next in this incredible journey that you've been on, and we wish you every success and wish you very well, and we cannot wait to see what it's going to be. Thank you so much for joining us today, Farzana Rahman, founder of the Dessie Doll Company.
Thank you for having me on the show, Shalina.
And that brings our four-part series, Muslim Women Talk Ramadan, to a close. And I am feeling so emotional. My heart is bursting with pride and inspiration and upliftment from all the incredible women that have joined us during the series. And also to all the women, children, and some of the men who have been listening throughout and the incredible feedback that they have given us. We do need a space for women to talk about Ramadan, and we do need to be able to have conversations openly and honestly, thinking about our well-being, our physical and our mental health. I know that I have learned a huge amount recording this series and listening to the feedback, and I do feel for the first time that I'm going to be coming out of Ramadan through Eid and into the year ahead, that I have a solid groundwork, and actually maybe I can keep that Ramadan spirit alive for the months ahead until, inshallah, we have another one again next year. I hope you felt the same too, and that sharing this space with Muslim women has made Ramadan an even more beautiful experience than what we were hoping for. Thank you to all our guests during this series, Henrietta Savati for her guidance, to Nadia Hussein, Baroness Saida Warsi, Farzana Rahman and Dr. Kiran Rahim, and a special shout out, of course, for Hannah and Iman, my daughters. I've been your host, Shalina Jan Mohammed. Thank you for joining us on Muslim Women Talk Ramadan.